Hey, it's Scott Petrek with another episode of the Browns Zone Zone Coverage Podcast. The Browns won their preseason opener, play again Friday night, and are signing defensive lineman Shelby Harris. In addition to that, Joe Thomas entered the Hall of Fame, and a Johnny Manziel documentary was released. Here to discuss, as always, is Dave Chudowski of Go, the WKYC Morning News. Hey, Chud.
Hey, Scott. So basically nothing's going on.
Exactly. You know, I tried to. I'm sure I could fit other stuff into that opening, but we got to get going. So I couldn't keep it. I couldn't keep the opening any longer.
Yeah, really. I mean, and we're only into our second preseason game. You know, I mean, we're not even at the season yet. But as we always say, there's plenty to talk about. And I think before we look back, I think let's look to the future. I think the first thing I want to talk about is. Deshaun Watson is going to start and play a series or two, or, you know, Stefanski's going to play it by ear on that. But that to me is what we need to start out with the next game. And, you know, are you surprised he's playing? Is this pretty much what you figured? I feel like in a recent pod, you had mentioned you thought that he would get some time in this game, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I did think he would, Chud. And part of that is, they're going to go to Philly next week and have two joint practices with the Eagles before the preseason game against the Eagles. And once, if you have the joint practices, then you don't play the starters in the game. It feels like the coaches feel like they got their work in. They don't want to push it. You know, sometimes tempers get heated during those practices. So I don't expect the starters, or at least most of the starters, to play in that Eagles game. So therefore, you got to get some preseason reps at some point. Right? Unless you're going to rest everybody the whole preseason, which they're not going to do. So I expect to see Watson play a couple series, a series or two against the Commanders, take the next week off against the Eagles, and then I think he'll come back and play in the preseason finale against the Chiefs in Kansas City. You know, now, I mean, the Browns have four preseason games this year, but, you know, now it's a three preseason game schedule, and a lot of teams treat that finale as the dress rehearsal because it's so early in the calendar, right? There's still a couple of weeks before the opener. So we've seen it with Stefanski. We saw him play Baker Mayfield in 2021. We saw Jacoby Brissett last year. So I fully expect to see Watson against the Commanders and against the Chiefs.
Let's get our Deshaun Watson update sponsored by Petrax Pebbles, everyone's favorite breakfast cereal. Just listening to him talk the other day, watching him in practice. Where are we at with him right now?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'll start with what he talked about Wednesday. We hadn't talked to him since right at the beginning of training camp, so it had been a while. You know, he's taking this preseason. He didn't want to put too much into it. You know, he said, yes, it's everything, meaning you get out there, you get some reps, you get the operation. He was big on, okay, we need to get the operation down of, you know, getting the play in and, you know, getting the snap off on time, right? Just everything that goes into lining up and running, you know, going from down to down, getting the plays in and out, getting in and out of the huddle, that kind of thing. But he didn't want to put too much into it. He said, hey, it's, you know, all of it comes up to getting us ready for the opener. All the training camp practices, all the offseason, all the meetings, the preseason, like it's just one step in this big journey toward September 10th versus the Bengals. You know, he said last year, because somebody asked him, hey, you know, last year against the Jaguars, you know, that was like a year ago. Does it feel like a long time? And he said, it's a blur. And then you flash back a little bit, and I'm sure you remember this, Chud. Right, he hadn't played in forever. He starts against Jacksonville, in Jacksonville. They don't get a first down, and he plays three series, no first downs. He goes like 1 for 5 for 7 yards. He did an interview beforehand with the team, Aditi Kinkabrala, where he apologized for all the off-field stuff, but yet he's really never shown contrition since then. The Jacksonville fans boo him, and they chant profane stuff. So, like, there was a lot going on a year ago. A year, you know, so we step forward a year, and this feels like just a routine preseason game. He's going to play a couple of series. You know, I'm sure the fans will treat him well at home. It's at Cleveland Browns Stadium. So I think there's a big change from last year. But the key question still is there rust? And has he shaken off enough of that rust? And he said, I'm not going to be able to answer that until I get out there, and probably not until he gets to week one, right? Is he back to who he was in Houston? And we've talked about it a million times. That's the question facing the Browns. If he plays at that level, the Browns are going to be good. If he doesn't, I think they're going to struggle. And now, playing off of that, you know, he had a really good offseason program. I thought he had a good mini camp, a good start to training camp. And then there were some dips. And part of that is because the defense has played really well. They're getting a lot of pressure on him. Myles Garrett's winning. He's beating Jedrick Wills a lot. He's beating whoever he goes against. And that makes it tough on the offense. I think Watson had some down days where the accuracy wasn't what he wanted to be. Maybe the decision-making wasn't. Part of that's good defense. Part of that's a pass rush. And part of that is I think he struggled for a couple days. I thought the last 2 days he played better. And especially Monday, I thought he had his best practice of training camp. He was really good inside the red zone, threw a bunch of touchdowns. I thought he played pretty well Wednesday in practice. They weren't in pads, but it was still a pretty good practice. It went for an hour and a half. I thought there was some stuff to take away from that session as well. So, you know, there's ebbs and flows, but I think there's enough to keep him, his teammates, and the coaches optimistic about where he's going to be this year.
All right, so when our heads hit the pillow on Friday night after watching that game, how should we want to feel about Watson? And when I ask you this, basically last year, there were some glimpses, but I never felt like, you know, you were watching the Deshaun Watson of old, right? And you just mentioned it, okay? Yeah. So let's say he comes out and just doesn't do it. And he has he plays a series or two and he doesn't look good. I mean, do you go to bed worried? Do you think that we have to see something? Or if he struggles, do we just shake it off? Hey, it's preseason. Yeah. He'll be fine in the regular season.
Yeah, that's interesting, Chud. I think it's kind of a combination. I do. I think if he struggles, I think it's natural to question, okay, where is he on this path? Has he gotten back to who he's going to be? But I think with everything, you have to remember, it is only the preseason. It is only one, two, or three series, right? However long he plays. I wouldn't go apoplectic if he struggles, but I certainly think it would be better for everyone, including the fan base's psyche, if he plays better, right? If he looks like, if he leads a touchdown drive, if he throws some completions, he maybe scrambles for a first down, they run him once, something that you feel like, okay, he got into a little bit of rhythm. This is how you see the offense being when the Bengals come to town September 10th. I kind of compare it to Cade York, Judd. He misses that kick to start the preseason. And if you had doubts about him because he struggled last year as a rookie, and I know fans did, you automatically, or at least a lot of fans did, flash back to, oh my gosh, here we go again. And I don't know if that's the right attitude to have, right? Like, it's a new year. It's one kick. It would be one preseason game for Watson. But I understand that thought process.
Yeah, sure. We'll get to Cade York in a moment when we talk about the game that they've played already. But just quickly here, don't have to really break it down. Yeah. But Stefanski said everyone's going to be in uniform, right? Like most starters are going to play. Is that what we're looking at?
Yeah, everybody's going to be in uniform if you're healthy. Majority of starters will play. Like, I don't think Nick Chubb's going to play. I don't think Myles Garrett's going to play. Maybe not Joe Bitonio. But you're going to see most of the starting 22 out there.
Okay. You said the word healthy. That's the other big story, I think, right now. The injuries are starting to pile up.
Yeah, they are. And nothing, knock on wood if you're a Browns fan, right? Nothing crazy significant, right? They haven't lost a player for the season. We don't know about Marquise Goodwin yet, right? The blood clots from Marquise Goodwin. But the latest are you're down two defensive ends. Alex Wright and Isaiah Thomas both had arthroscopic knee surgery on Tuesday. They're not going to be ready for the start of the season. So, you know, I think the Browns are hopeful they'll be back early in the season. I don't know if that's week two, week four, whatever. But you're going to be down a couple of guys. And it's a key position. We know that Jim Schwartz wants to rotate a bunch of guys at end. So now you're getting into your depth a little bit. And actually, I'm writing my preview for the Commanders game right now. And I'm leading with Isaiah McGuire, the rookie defensive end, fourth-round draft pick out of Missouri. Nobody's talking about him. And all of a sudden, if you look at the depth chart, now he's the fourth end, which means he's going to play at least, I don't know, maybe let's project to week one, a dozen snaps, 15 snaps to spell Garrett and Za'Darius Smith and Obo Okoronkwo. And this is a guy we haven't talked any about because he's so far down the depth chart, and now he's going to be pushed up into a role. So, yeah, they're into their depth a little bit. The Browns, actually, as we're recording this, Chud, the Browns just made official they're signing defensive lineman Shelby Harris, who's more of a defensive tackle, but I think he's a little hybrid because he's played defensive end in the 3-4 for a bunch of his career. But it just shows you they feel like they need to improve that, the overall defensive line. And then you have Jerome Ford, the number two running back, out with the hamstring. You know, it doesn't feel like it's a significant hamstring. He was already on the side working out yesterday, which, you know, if it's bad, they stay inside for a few days. So I think that's a good sign. But Kevin Stefanski would not go there for – I asked him if he's optimistic he'll be ready week one, and he would not go there. So I'm sure they're hopeful. I'm sure they're hopeful he plays week one, but they're not – he's not ready to say yes, he'll be there week one.
Yeah, and those soft tissue injuries, those are not good for a player like Jerome Ford. I think this one's a concern. And, you know, he was one of our big storylines heading into the season on our pod a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. And, you know, it makes you wonder, you know, would they regret maybe not bringing Kareem Hunt back? I mean, I understand why they didn't and all that. Kareem Hunt right now looking – nothing official with him, right? I mean, he's looked at New Orleans and Indianapolis. But, you know, this is a big deal here because, you know, you got to have someone to back up Chubb.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, Chud. Like, we've talked about it a bunch. And there's a little bit of a uncertainty with Jerome Ford, right? He only had 8 carries last year as a rookie for 12 yards. But the Browns feel confident he can be that number two. After him, you got John Kelly Jr., you got Demetric Felton, and you got undrafted rookie Hassan Hall, right? I don't know if the Browns would feel comfortable with any of those guys as your number two. Maybe they would try to kind of ham and egg it with those guys and figure out a way to get through a game or two without Ford. You know, maybe Kelly takes over on first down if Chubb's tired, Demetric Felton then, you know, plays on third down, that kind of thing. But if it looks like this Ford thing is going to linger, I would not be surprised if they went out and got a proven veteran running back. And there's plenty of those guys out there. Now, I don't think you're going a huge name, right? But a guy with the resume to come in so you can trust him to be that number two back. And you mentioned Hunt, and I don't see them signing Hunt. Even I know he remains unsigned. He did talk to New Orleans. He talked to the Colts. I think that ship has sailed. But it's interesting because for the last 4 years, you've known who your number two is, and it's a pretty reliable guy in Kareem Hunt.
Man. Thoughts on the win over the Jets? Browns start out 1-0.
Yeah, you know, it's a preseason opener, right? No, not many of the big names played. But I think there were a couple of takeaways. Dorian Thompson-Robinson, the rookie quarterback out of UCLA, he entered camp in a competition with Kellen Mond to be the third quarterback. I expected DTR to win that job, and now I think it's just about a lock, right? Now, I get it. We got 3 preseason games left. I think both guys are going to play in all 3 preseason games, the remaining 3 games, so there's plenty of race left to be run. But if DTR, in my mind, was the favorite, he only stretched that lead with how he played. I didn't think Mond played great either. But DTR looked good, led 2 touchdown drives. He showed his legs. He threw it a little bit. There was a 22-yard touchdown pass to receiver Austin Watkins Jr., who has shown up. I think he's another guy from camp and then that preseason game. Came from the USFL. There's been injuries at receiver, so he's gotten some reps. I thought he looked good. I think he's looked good throughout. Keep an eye on him for maybe that final receiver spot or certainly a practice squad opening when roster cuts happen at the end of the month. Those 2 guys stood out. You know, Felton had a touchdown run. You know, to me, he's nothing special, but yes, you can play him. He's serviceable. I think he's shown that enough. I thought Tony Fields, the linebacker, was active. And then we talked about York missing the kick, and then he almost missed the next extra point, but he made it. And when you talk to the kickers, that's all that counts is he squeezed it in the right upright. And then Anthony Schwartz, right? The receiver, first touch of the game, fumbles the end around. Played a bunch. I don't think he had any catches. And, you know, everybody's down on him. I get it. He's been a big disappointment. I don't expect him to make the team, but I will say this. He's shown up in practice the last couple of days, Judd. I thought he had a real good practice Wednesday. A couple of difficult catches that he made. So, you know, like I said, he's a long shot. They love his speed. If he shows something over these last three games, maybe he can make that push to win that final receiver spot.
Yeah, a lot of ways to go here. But, yeah, you bring up a lot of good points. And, yeah, it's preseason and, you know, it's a tough watch a lot. But, you know, the DTR, I mean, he's a prime example of what these preseason games are all about. You get to see what you have in him. And I thought that was good. And I was going to ask you about Watkins. You brought him up. Just quickly, do you think he'll make the team? You said possibly practice squad, maybe the last roster spot. Gun to your head, which I would never do, but if, you know, I'm just saying, do you think he'll make it?
I would say no right now. Here's why I go with the receivers, right? Cooper, Moore, Peoples-Jones, Cedric Tillman are locks to make the roster.
Okay.
I think David Bell is pretty much a lock, given he was a third round pick a year ago. But didn't show a ton as a rookie. He just doesn't have the speed that you're looking for. He's not explosive enough. And I think that shows up in practice. But I think they want to give him a chance. They like his hands. They like how smart he is. Third round pick, I don't think he gets cut. So there's five guys. Then I think you keep a returner, whether it's Jakeem Grant Sr. or Jalen Darden, who's been out a while with a leg injury now. And I think that's hurting his case. But Jakeem Grant has been in team drills the last couple of days. He's progressing well from that torn Achilles. So right now I lean toward him as that sixth spot. And then the question is, do they keep a seventh guy? And they might. And if they keep a seventh guy, then it is, to me, it's Watkins or Schwartz. And Daylon Baldwin would have been in that discussion, but then he's got that torn hamstring, so he's out, and they put him on IR. So right now I would say no to Watkins, but I think there is a scenario there, Chud, and I don't think it's a far-fetched scenario.
Yeah. You have to admit, the beginning of that game, it's like, oh, my gosh, turnovers, penalties, missed field goal. It's like, the Browns are back. But, right? I mean, come on. Tell me you weren't thinking that. I know it's not the starters in his preseason, but still, it's like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was bad football. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, but they get the win. And how about Nick Chubb? I believe I saw – you know, a story, and I think you did this, talking about expanding his role on third down this season.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. It's interesting. We talked to Stump Mitchell, right, the running back coach, run game coordinator, and we talked to him, and he's all, you know, we talked to him in minicamp, and he said, hey, I think we're going to throw the ball more to Chubb, and I wouldn't be surprised if he caught 1,000 yards, which, you know, Stump likes to exaggerate a little bit. But his point is – his point is they're going to throw the ball to Chubb. They're going to throw the ball more. You don't have Hunt now, so Chubb's going to be out there more. And then he said, hey, the other day he said, yeah, he's going to be out there on third down. Well, we've never seen Chubb in that role, right? A little bit when Hunt would be hurt. But even then, they usually bring in D'Ernest Johnson or somebody else. So Stump feels like they're going to use Chubb on all three downs. And they'll give him a breather with Ford, but maybe it's not always on third down, right? Like Ford's not the designated third down back like Kareem Hunt was. Kareem Hunt was that third down guy. And I think that's interesting because then if it's short yardage, you can hand the ball to Chubb. You know, he's not a bad receiver out of the backfield. He doesn't look as natural as Ford or Hunt, but he still catches it, and he catches it pretty consistently. I thought it was interesting that Mitchell said that because that's a departure from how the Browns have used him. Kevin Stefanski walked it back a little bit. He's like, yeah, we haven't decided that. We're still working through that. So, you know, I think you'll probably see more of Chubb in third down, but probably maybe not as much as Stump Mitchell thinks you're going to see him on third down.
Yeah. I want to go back to Cade York and wrap him up. Yeah. Are you concerned? Are you concerned about Cade York from not just that miss, but as his work so far last year and then what you've seen in practice so far? Any concern, or do you think we'll be okay there?
There is some concern, but my concern level is not as high as I know a lot of fans' concern level is. I see a lot of positives in Cade York. He's got a huge leg, a lot of success at LSU. I think there's some parallels. He struggled as a freshman at LSU and then got much better. I think I like his mindset and his mentality. You never know for sure, right, what a kicker thinks. I compared a lot to golf because it's that position is really similar to golf, right? The ball's sitting there. It's up to you. You have to clear your head. And I've talked to Kate a little bit about that. I'd like to go more in depth with him. But I think he's going to be okay. I think he's got all the tools necessary. But you got to start making kicks, right? And that's the bottom line. But I don't think you want to give up on him too early. And Daniel Carlson's a perfect example. He struggled early in his career. They cut – I think it was Minnesota – cut him, and then he becomes a Pro Bowl kicker for the Raiders, right? So sometimes there's growing pains with your young kicker.
Yeah, okay. Anything else on the game that you want to hit on or any other player in practice before I move on to my last two topics?
No, I think we're good, Chad. I think we've hit what I wanted to.
All right. Hey, let's talk about Joe Thomas now.
Yeah.
What a weekend it was for him. And last time we talked, we spoke plenty about him, and we previewed I thought Channel 3, I don't know if you saw the hour special we did, Jimmy Donovan and sports director Yak and Nick Camino and everyone involved did a great job at Channel 3 for the hour special. And I know, you know, Channel 3, man, we were all over the place covering that. It was a big deal, and it was a lot of fun. And I just kind of want to get your take. You were down there, obviously, for all the events, did a great job writing stories and just, you know, bring fans in who weren't down there, kind of give them a feel what it was like, and just, I guess, your overall impressions of covering Joe Thomas go be enshrined into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it was just really cool, right? I've never been down there for the Hall. I've obviously never covered – I've never had a player that I covered get into the Hall of Fame. So it was really cool. And we talked about this last week. I talked to Joe the Sunday before. He called me when he got to town. I wrote a story about him leading up to it. So that was really neat, Chud. I thought his speech was good. Mentioned a bunch of people, thanked a bunch of people. The turnout, so it was great, right? I know he had a blast, all of it, from the Gold Jacket dinner to the parade to even the Jim Brown celebration of life. Joe was there, front row. He was glad to be kind of connected with Jim Brown in this weekend. You know, the greatest Brown ever, and then the greatest Brown from the expansion era. I thought there was some symmetry there. So, you know, Joe soaked every second of fun and celebration into that weekend, and I think that was great for Joe. Now, you know, the turnout was – I wondered about the turnout, right? I thought it would be packed with Browns fans. And it was a good crowd, but there were a lot of Dolphins fans, a lot of Jets fans. People come to this. They travel for it, right? And the Jets fans wanted it. They were there for the Hall of Fame game too, but then they got to see Darrell Revis, Joe Klecko get in. The Miami fans saw Zach Thomas get in. And then by the time Joe talked, he was the last one to talk. Like, a lot of the crowd had cleared out, because if you're the Jets fan, you leave. It's a long day. It's, you know, it's almost 4 hours, the ceremony. So I thought that was a little different than I expected. Like, I thought we were going to have a huge crowd for Joe, and it wasn't huge. I mean, there are a lot of Browns fans, and they barked, and you got a great welcome. But that surprised me a little bit. And then the other thing I got to tell you, Chad, one of my favorite parts of being there is I was down on the floor, right? Like, went up in the press box, and I went down to the floor. And seeing so many of Joe's former teammates, Alex Mack, Mitchell Schwartz, Tony Pashos, John Greco, Dave Zastadil, Aaron Shea, right? Like, I could go down the list. Joe Gervicius, who was there for Rondi Barber, and I think Joe, kind of a crossover. It was just cool to see those guys and see them kind of in their element, right? Like, at one point, I was all by all these old offensive linemen, and they're drinking beer, talking football. You know, their wives are there. Like, they're asking Batonio, because Joe Batonio showed up, and they're asking him about practice, right? Like, so there's still this football-ness, and Tony Pashos wanted to talk about DeMarcus Ware and what a great player he was, because he got enshrined that day. So I got a kick out of that. Just so, you know, I kind of reconnected with those guys too. But just seeing them there to celebrate their teammate and one of their favorite all-time teammates in Joe Thomas, I thought that was really cool.
Which team represented the most fan-wise? Was it the Jets, Dolphins?
Yeah, I mean, it was the Browns were, yeah. I mean, the Browns are number one, right? I mean, it's Canton down the road. But after the Browns, I would say the Jets, which made sense because they had two guys getting in. But I thought the Dolphins showed up really well for Zach Thomas. There were a lot of Dolphins jerseys. And then, you know, I mentioned all the Browns people I saw. But I saw Marvin Lewis, right? Like, you would see other – I saw Gary Kubiak. You saw, like, NFL people. So, you know, I would recommend to fans, if you got some time to kill in the Hall of Fame enshrinement, go down because it's really good viewing of just big-time NFL people that you're going to run across that you normally would, right? Like, I think there's certainly a wow element to that.
Were you at the gold jacket ceremony?
I was not. I needed a break from Canton. I couldn't make that drive every day. So I went Thursday, Saturday. Yeah.
Yeah, right. No question. Just so many events. I mean, it just looks like it'd just be an unbelievable experience. That was an awesome moment at the gold jacket ceremony when all his kids ran up to him.
Yep. It was. And they did a good job with that. You know, he had his wife, Annie, and the four kids present him in that video. And, you know, Annie said some great stuff about Joe. And then they would ask the kids, and one of them was like, you know, he's really nice. And then he's really strong. Like, they gave these little one word or, you know, phrase answers about their dad. It was really cute.
Yeah, no doubt. It was great. I didn't watch a lot of the ceremony. I saw some of it. I saw everything to do with Joe, but the one that I did see, the Darrell Revis, his mom, man, that was phenomenal. Like, learning about him more than just Revis Island. I mean, like, if there's someone who just is the epitome of Hall of Famer, it's him, right? I mean, the guy had an island named after him, right? I mean,
right.
But I enjoyed watching her speech. And I like what I liked about that is Annie's was great, but you get the perspective of a wife. But it was kind of cool to learn, you know, how the coaches knew right away when they saw Revis that he was going to be, you know, an NFL star. And if she stayed on him, he would make it. And I wish I saw all the intros. I didn't, but, you know, those are pretty cool to watch, man.
Yeah, they are. You know, there's no doubt about that. And then the speeches, like, Joe's speech was solid, but there wasn't, like, a ton of emotion in it, right? Like, he didn't tell this, like, tear-jerking story. But DeMarcus Ware told a story about being at a party and a fight breaks out, and all of a sudden he's got a gun to his head. And I think his family yells, like, don't kill him. Like, and then his life changed after that. And he devoted himself to football and making himself an NFL player and winds up in the Hall of Fame. Ronnie Barber talked about being undersized his whole career. Like, there's, you know, I think Joe was always a great athlete. Joe was always on this track to be a big-time player. Now, he had to work crazy hard to become a Hall of Famer. I'm not arguing that at all, right? And he was dedicated, and we know about the streak snap that he cared so much about. And that just shows you who Joe is. And he thanked his dad for showing him. I thought that was one of the best parts of Joe's speech. You know, he talks about the 10-3-6-3 streak snap, the snap streak. And then he says he watched his dad put on cross-country skis so he could get to work in a blizzard. And that's where that philosophy comes from, right? Like, to me, that was like, I thought that was the best moment in Joe's speech, because that means so much to Joe. And then he's saying, Dad, thank you for instilling that in me. But then you had the underdog stories. You mentioned Revis and DeMarcus Ware. Like, he can point to one moment where his life changed. Rondé Barber said, hey, nobody thought I was going to be a Hall of Famer. He goes, I was lucky. I was thinking to myself, am I going to make the team when he's a rookie and in his second year? And then he becomes a Hall of Famer because he's a little bit undersized. So I think those types of stories are what the Hall of Fame is all about.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this right now, before we get to our last thing is, you know, I think being a parent is the most important thing in the world and in this country. And I think that's a reflection on Joe's parents. And, you know, if everyone was like that, I think that's a downfall in our society is, you know, I guess my message to people listening to this, take being a parent seriously. It's the most important job in the world.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I'm forgetting which Hall of Famer said it. It might've been Revis. Had the same message. That was the exact message. So yeah, you're 100% right, Chuck.
Hey, real quick, who's going to be the next Browns Hall of Famer?
It's a good question. There's three candidates: Batonio, Garrett, and Chubb. I'm going to go Man, I'm gonna go Garrett, and I say that because I think it's really hard for a guard to get in. Now, if the Browns go and win a couple Super Bowls in the next 4 years, then Joe Bitonio's got a really good shot, and he's on that trajectory. But it's hard for a guard to get in. Chubb, I think, is on the trajectory too, but that's a tough position. You need longevity. I think he's got to play another 4 years and get 1,200 yards a year, and that's just not easy to do. I'm not saying Chubb can't do it, but I think that's what he needs to do to be considered, in my mind, a surefire Hall of Famer. So I need to see him do that. Where Garrett, I think, is going to play well for another 4, 5, 6 years if he plays that long. And when I talked to him a year ago, he said he, you know, I think he said he had one more contract in him, he felt like. So he wasn't looking toward retirement. He's got 74 and a half sacks, I think, already. DeMarcus Ware had 128. He had 16 the last 2 years. Like, it's not hard to get the numbers there for Miles. He's such a big name, number one overall pick. If the Browns get to the playoffs, right, because you need that in all these positions, which makes Joe's Hall of Fame candidacy that much greater, because he's no doubter, even though the Browns were terrible when he was there. So let's say the Browns get to a playoff or two, and they have one with Miles already, and he gets that elusive defensive player of the year, I could see Miles being a Hall of Famer because he's that gifted. So I'm going to go Miles, but I think it's an interesting discussion.
Yeah, but there's no other guy from 99 that's not playing anymore that has a shot.
I don't think so.
Yeah, right. All right, last topic for me, and let's go to the exact opposite of being a Hall of Famer, and that's the quarterback that caused a lot of headaches and has a special on Netflix now. You've seen it. I have not yet. I can't wait to watch it. I feel like I already watched it throughout his career in the Browns, and you probably felt the same way. But anyway, I've seen a lot on Twitter and social media, and I've had a lot of people text me about it. But thoughts on the Johnny Manziel Netflix series?
Yeah, it brought back some memories. That was a rough time to be a beat writer covering this team, because there was always something about Johnny, and it wasn't just Johnny, right? Like, it overlapped with, you know, Josh Gordon was, I think, they overlapped. Justin Gilbert was a disaster from that same draft class, right? You had the Ray Farmer texting down. Like, that was just a bad time for the Browns. And to be in the middle of it, and you know how it is. Like, covering this team is enough when it's all about football. And then you add non-football stuff, and it becomes a drain. And there was a lot of non-football stuff with Johnny, right? Everybody knows that. And watching this documentary was just a reminder of that. Now, when we get to the actual documentary, it's worth watching, certainly. I thought they could have done so much more with it. There wasn't that much about the Browns. There was a lot of Texas A&M stuff, which I get it. You know, that's where he was the better player, was at A&M. But they didn't delve into, you know, they didn't delve into their let's wreck the league when he texted Dowell Loggins, the quarterback coach, right? And then the Browns drafted. There's none of, you know, Jimmy Haslam's influence. It felt like there's a lot of Jimmy Haslam influence in the decision to trade up and draft Johnny. They didn't delve into that. They didn't talk about the decision to start him when Brian Hoyer was having a good season. And it felt like a front office decision, not a coaching decision, and abrupt, because the Browns were, I think, 7-4 at the time, and then they go to Johnny, and he's terrible, and he's overmatched. They do talk about him not watching any film, and he said he watched zero film, which just shows you how he didn't care about his career with the Browns, right? So I just thought they could have delved much deeper into the Browns period of it, and even just overall. Like, they talk – the big takeaway from the documentary, and we've seen, you know, people have written stories about it, is that Johnny talks about when he gets cut from the Browns, he considers suicide, and he takes a gun and he puts it to his head and he clicks it, and then a bullet doesn't fire. Well, they don't, like, that's all they do. They don't say, well, okay, were you glad that it didn't fire? Like, did you try to kill yourself again? Like, it felt like there was so many more questions that could have been asked to Johnny, and just answered in the documentary, I didn't think they did that. And, you know, it was all Johnny. It was Johnny's dad. It was Johnny's agent. And it was Cliff Kingsbury. It felt a little one-sided. And I think, at least personally, I came out of there not liking any of those people. Now, Cliff Kingsbury was fine. But I felt like he enabled Johnny at A&M. He was his coordinator at A&M. But his dad came off terrible. I thought his agent came off terrible. And I thought Johnny came off terrible. And, you know, I had a buddy text me like, hey, obviously Johnny's smart. I hope he figures this out. And I hope he figures it out too. But the documentary did not make me feel like he's figuring stuff out, right? I mean, he had a substance abuse problem. He talks about going to rehab. They show him with beer, and I don't know if they show him smoking a bong, but all the guys he's hanging out with are smoking bongs. Like, it is placed now in Scottsdale. Like, I didn't feel like Johnny has turned any kind of corner.
Wow. All right. We'll have to check that out. Good insight on that. I'll never forget the night he was drafted, man. Oh. I know that I did not want them to draft him, but then I have to be honest, Scott. I was at the Browns watch party doing a live shot for Channel 3 Sports, and I got excited. I'm like, wait, maybe I'm wrong. Like, I got into it. All the fans went crazy.
Right.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I caught Manziel fever on that night, but it didn't take me long. Like, I mean, the next week or two, and then just watching it all unravel, I'm like, this is a disaster. And I mean, it was – he ruined every – you know, I anchored sports on the weekends during that time. And every Saturday night, Scott, I would have my show, like, ready to go, and I'd have to change it up at the last minute because he would, you know, get on the Flamingo or whatever it was that he did on Saturday night. There was always something, you know?
There was. Yeah, I mean, go ahead, yeah.
That became the story then. It was always about him and what he was doing off the field as opposed to, you know, the Browns as a team. And it was such a big distraction.
Oh, there's no doubt. Yeah, there's no doubt, Chud. And I didn't think they should draft him because I didn't think he was going to be any good. I thought he was too small. I thought his game was way too hectic and off schedule. And that proved to be the case, right? Especially when you're not watching any film. As silly as it sounds, you can beat Alabama running around making plays. You can't beat the Bengals. You can't beat the Steelers. It doesn't work like that. You know, Mahomes runs around, but it's not the same, right? It's within the offense. He makes throws out of the pocket. Johnny was all improvisation and by the seat of his pants. And now maybe if he dedicated himself, it would have been different, right? Because he's got talent. He had a pretty good arm. He's an athletic kid. I don't know if he's athletic enough to run around like he did in the NFL, right? Guys are bigger, faster, stronger, all that. So I thought it was a terrible idea. I'm not sure they needed to trade up to get him, and they did that. I thought it was bad. And then you're right. It just became nonstop, right? He would go out the night before games, and you would hear those stories. And then, obviously, when it went completely south is the whole going to Vegas while he's hurt, night before the game, doesn't make it back. And I remember, right? I mean, I remember Billy Vegas, right? Like, I remember being in the – post-game interview room, like thinking about how am I going to ask Mike Patton about Johnny with the fake mustache, right? Like it was such a joke, and he made it a joke because he didn't care. And maybe that was the substance abuse, who knows, right? And he says he's bipolar. Maybe that had something to do with it. But from a football perspective, he certainly did not put nearly the time or dedication in, and that's on Johnny.
All right. Well, we clearly have a history at the quarterback position, and we'll continue on tomorrow night when Deshaun Watson and the Browns take on Washington in their second preseason game. Enjoy it, Scott, and we'll continue on here as the preseason moves on. But that's it for me. Time for a nap.
There you go. Sounds good, Chud. Thanks for doing this, as always. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This has been another episode of the Zone Coverage Podcast, and you can read all my work at brownzone.com. Thanks.